So, for some reason, Jenna's body is rejecting itself, possibly because this weekend at a wedding, she painted a beautiful marble bathroom in shades of dark green and black, like a, I don't know, like a sprinkler system.
When he means painted, he means it. Like, you know when people are like, I threw up everywhere, you're like, yeah, you threw up, maybe you got some, a little bit on the floor, maybe in a bag, whatever. No. I literally threw up, like, the whole floor was covered in puke. It splattered on the wall, the floor, and the shower, and the toilet. And then...
You somehow hit the toilet the least, which is probably the most impressive thing about this.
I did. I will say, yeah, the bottom of the toilet didn't get it too much, just a little bit of the back. And then I decided to not clean it up after I did it, and to just put towels over everything, because that's where I was mentally at the moment. And then I woke up and was just like, oh yeah, now I gotta clean it up, and it's all dried. And Scott said he walked in on me when I was puking,
This is what happened. I was given a large amount of open alcohol accessibility for a several hours length.
Yeah.
And we returned to our hotel room after drinking around a bunch of people with English accents, which is scary.
Yeah.
Because this when they talk to you, you feel like insignificant. Like, yeah. You know, I am naked. I hear a splattering sound. And as I pull open the door, there's just this woman surrounded by sick. And you just looked at me and went, sorry.
I'm still hungover today. I'm not going to lie.
So that was our weekend. And
Scott also threw up at the restaurant.
No, at the bar.
At the in the bathroom.
I got it into where it's supposed to go.
So I waited till we got home.
That's not our home. The Millennium Knickerbocker Hotel was not our home.
It's our home now.
Not for nothing. I don't want to like get into like the whole how the sausage is made thing, but basically the way we start every episode before we actually record is Scott and I be like, oh, do you have something to start with? Whatever. And every time I let Scott start with something, it's about pissing or shitting or vomiting. Every fucking time.
I'm the one that vomited, so that was my fault.
No, but it's
it was a bacchanalia. Of course there's vomit and piss and shit and fluids.
He has to let everyone know about my vomit and where I did it, when I did it.
I told that story about 14 different ways for 14 different people when I bartended on Sunday.
He told everyone at the bar. I'm like, why are you? I'm almost 30 years old. Like, this is not cute that I'm doing
this. No, it's
not
cute. That's why it's fun to tell.
It's funny to me because I'm just like, that's just like, oh, there's old Jenna. Like, drunk, crazy Jenna coming out, where I'm like, in my day-to-day, I'm like, I take my vitamins, I try to eat good, I just started yoga. I'm trying to do all these things, but then if there are, like, once it's like the third shot of whiskey inside me, I morph into this literal psychopath. I love her, but I also...
Whiskey hag.
I hate her, too.
It's like if someone gives you whiskey and there's a woman in a nice white dress holding flowers, walking around smiling and shaking people's hands, like, your mind just goes... and you just start slamming shots. And
I think I've blacked out at, like, every wedding we've attended this year. Like,
I think it's an anxiety thing for both of us.
Maybe.
I think it's just... I was, like, touching my pockets a lot. I was just like,
yeah, Scott kept
hand in the pockets, hand outside the pocket,
Scott
hand on the hip while talking.
His suspenders off.
Oh, my suspenders kept flying off. Yeah.
We had a good time, though.
It was a great time.
Were you wearing clip suspenders?
Yeah.
What is the proper kind?
That's why.
I bought them.
Rube. You gotta get ones with holes, and then you put buttons in your pants.
Oh.
I've never bought those for him.
Yeah. A lot of people don't.
And I think that's
why didn't we didn't conference with Steve before we bought your outfit.
That's true.
Where we failed.
Yeah.
Also, this explains why all the British people are like, "And who are you again?" Man of clip-on suspenders.
Yeah.
Fuck them.
To a man for about 48 seconds and said I was going to become a teacher, and he went, "Ha, you have a good time," and walked away from
me. Who the hell said that?
I don't know, some fucking English dude with a weak chin, which was like all of them.
Honestly, I don't.
Why do the English have such weak chins?
I don't know. I don't talk to any of them. I can't handle it. It's too much.
Yeah, I know. Some guy talked to me.
I talk to the one I like, and then the rest, eh.
Yeah.
For me. Then somebody, it was a lot. We got wild. We were not classy enough to be there.
Definitely. Oh, no. We definitely like, looked and felt like we did not belong at that wedding. Wrong. That's probably worth more than our lives combined.
Wrong. I definitely look like I belong there. I look super cute. Why? Just because I was bloated?
No, I definitely didn't look. You know, I don't look good because I'm bloated?
I was really bloated. I looked at the pictures and I was like, oh.
This is typical Jenna, though. Oh, you didn't compliment me today? Because why? Because I'm going through my period? Because I have cramps? Is that why? Like, you make it, you become angry, typical stereotype feminist where it's like, I'm not good because of what? I have hair on my chin?
I don't really have hair on my chin anymore, Scott. I've been going for laser hair removal. Thank
I'm just
you
saying,
much.
You always anymore. Take... anymore.
To be clear.
There's only one beard in this relationship.
I honestly was
and
thinking...
And it's still Jenna.
Fuck off. I was literally thinking about it in the shower, and I was like, you know what? I wish I could spend the day in somebody else's body, someone that has like minimal health problems, minimal pain, whatever, and see what that feels like to know, am I complaining too much or not enough? Because sometimes I think that the pain that I'm experiencing is so bad, but I've experienced it for so long that I'm just like, well, my back hurts, you know, like, or my ovaries hurt. But it's like, if somebody else, they might be like, Jenna, that's like bad. Like, you need to see the doctor bad. I just don't know anymore.
So you need to shapeshift into somebody else to justify your pain.
Correct.
We went from puking at a wedding to like this existential body swapping.
Yeah, well, I was like having a mental breakdown in the shower yesterday. So that's what I was thinking about. Okay. And then I thought while I was in there, what if someone just came in and murdered me while I was showering? I'd hate to be naked while I was being murdered. So then I went and locked the door. So I think that's called anxiety, but I'm not quite sure.
And everyone now understands exactly what I deal with.
What you deal with? Okay.
Steve, what'd you do this weekend? Did you vomit or have an existential body crisis?
No, I'm done vomiting. I stopped like having a mysterious gut illness, so I didn't do any vomiting recently. I mostly just played a lot of Elden Ring. Michelle was in Pittsburgh doing whatever the fuck
I saw.
There.
She looked like she was having fun.
Yeah, she has like friends, apparently.
Yeah, so. She's always doing something.
Yeah, she loves to do stuff, which I don't, so that's cool.
That's why, see, I love to do stuff and Scott does not. See, that this would be
Where do I have to go that I can't visit through the power of technology down here?
I don't know.
Exactly.
But
why go outside where people are?
But we could live in New Jersey and then I could hang out with Michelle and then you could hang out virtually with Steve. But,
oh, yeah.
But
and,
if
would, and then we could still do this.
We could still do this.
But if
no,
you...
No, nothing
you,
in person.
You have the option. If you wanted to see each other, you totally, nah. Totally could.
Discord. Nah. Discord and internet connection. That's all I need.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, you go ahead and go out. We only got you for like 12 minutes. So I know.
Yeah, I know. I gotta go soon.
Oh shit! I forgot about that.
I
forgot.
Yeah, I was
doing the episode.
Listen, I was literally she vomited. Fuming. She's existential. Now she's putting herself together. She's going out to dinner. This broad has no bounds.
Well, I have to see my friends. I haven't given them their Christmas presents. It's March. Like, what is that? That's unacceptable. That's a bad friend. They gave me theirs. Mine. What are words? Oh my god.
Anyway, we did Lair of the White Worm. I don't even know how to segue into this. There's a whole lot going on sitting across from me.
In other news, I'm a worm now. There you go.
I'm a white worm.
To be fair, since I'm not really going to have time to talk about this, I'm going to tell you what my rating is.
Oh, we're just going to do it right now?
I'm just going to tell you it, but I'm going to give you no reason. My rating is 2.5 stars. And also, I would like to be that woman.
You want to be...
The main character, the worm woman, the snake?
Peter Capaldi?
Is that the Scott guy?
Yeah.
He was a Scottish guy, yes.
What's the main woman's name?
Lady Sylvia Mosh? Yeah. That's Amanda Donahoe.
Yeah. Her?
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
She had like Dom Brit Mom vibes going on. Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, I'd like to Dom a hoe.
Boom!
Yeah, I just, for any problems I may or may not have had with the movie, like it was fun and goofy, whatever. It could have been the worst movie in the world. Just her being that person was, that's it. That's all. That's 5 stars for me. That character.
There's a sexy dom schoolmistress of sorts.
I liked.
Landed lady, titled lady.
Yes, I loved the, oh my God, the cigarette holder. That, ugh, that.
Biting the young guy's dick.
But, yeah, I liked when she bit it. Bye. Men don't need dicks. Like, you know that women can actually get pregnant without men? Did you know that?
How? Yeah, turkey basters are a magical thing.
Look it up. I don't know this. I don't understand the science. I just know it's true. Do your own research, Steve.
She googled it.
I don't need to do your emotional labor.
I'm sweating.
Jesus Christ.
Also, these new meds I'm on said I might have like hot flashes, which I've been having.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's super cool. I have to just like shower like once a day now. I hate showering.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, most people shower once a day. Yeah.
Ooh, who are these people that shower once a day? Oh my God. You stink, Scott.
Thank you. That's why I shower
Scott's, once a day. We call him Sweaty Spaghetti. And Scott smells like salami when he sweats.
See, I feel like that's just somehow
it's not
culturally attacking me.
It's literally not. You literally.
Because you don't smell like salami.
No, I smell like onions or bread, I think.
Yeah.
I think I smell like bread.
Oh, this is really bad jokes.
What
I
about
can make.
Yeast? Yeah. You're a child.
You were setting yourself up for it, though.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And I didn't say anything.
I forgot we were on air.
We just alluded to it.
On air.
On air.
Dead air.
Dead air. So, dead air. Dead air. Yeah. So, Jenna gives it 2.5 stars as a wannabe snake woman.
Yeah, and I said, this is my opinion.
This is why your Age of Sigmar army is a bunch of snake broads.
Yeah, that I did like their
fangs?
Are they called fangs?
Yeah.
Okay. Then yeah.
Okay.
I liked those. I didn't know. Well, you're going to, I feel like I'm going to ruin everything by talking more. I'm just going to be quiet now.
Oh, okay. You just drink your beer and feel better.
Yep.
Anyway, Lair of the White Worm, I'm going to give a quick opener before I do the fucking commercial bullshit. So, it's the penultimate film for Mythology March. That would be Lair of the White Worm, Ken Russell's 1988 horror comedy. If you've ever seen a Ken Russell movie, you will know that there is no such thing as subtlety, which, of course, Lair of the White Worm is not. It is everything from annoyingly British socialite drama to acid trip gone awry with giant snakes. It's based off of the 1911 Bram Stoker novel of the same name, penned just a year before his death, and is considered by many to be one of the worst gothic novels ever written. And itself, it's roughly based on the legend of the Lambton Worm, which is thought to have originated in the Penningchain mountain region found within Yorkshire, northeast and northwest England.
Oh, so it does derive from
yes.
Where they shot it.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't.
This movie is completely pointless if you don't know the myth,
sure.
Which is also completely dumb as a myth.
Well, and when it first is introduced in the movie, it's introduced through a man singing, and we did not have the subtitles on, and I checked out while he was singing because it was just like really bad. So I was just like laughing, but I wasn't like comprehending the words. And then after I was like, then I saw they're like, oh, they have a fake worm thing, and they like snake yeah. worm, and they cut it. And
snake
then
worm.
And then I was like, oh shit, Scott! Like, was I supposed to be paying attention to the song? And he's like, yeah. And so
the entire
make sure
exposition,
you pay attention to the song. Because
the entire exposition of this movie is a
it's
song.
It's told in a song.
It's told in a song by people from Northern England that have accents that are worse than any other accent you can possibly imagine.
It was
as they sing about a worm.
Yeah. That song was not a bop. Not a bop at all.
It's the actual song that the myth or it's like the typical song that is used to explain that myth too. Oh, so
that song's really good. So like I I was looking to find versions to add on to the playlist. Eventually I found the version that's in the movie, which is what's in there, but I actually listened to all the songs I put on the playlist. They're expertly curated. So I had to listen to like 12 different versions of this horrible fucking song. And they're all by like the McGaffo family band and shit. It's the worst garbage in the fucking world. So I definitely, I mean,
These are like the, you know, the grandfather, the generation of the original hillbillies, literally like growing up in the hills of England.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just weird because obviously we live in America. So when we think thank you. When we think of like a hill, I like to use the word hill jack. But when you think of a person like that, I don't know, it's an Indiana thing that we used to say. But when you like think about that, you think of someone with like a southern twang and like a really, you know, you think of a typical like twangy.
Yeah.
Hard to understand, like southern voice, but then
like someone that's from like it's like Creole.
Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, Cajun. Like, Cajun's hard to understand.
Like, or just like people from Mississippi.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good middle ground.
And then when you hear, but these are like their hill jacks of sorts.
Oh yeah.
And I can see that now that you explain it. But at first, when I was watching it, I just was like, what the heck is going on?
You legitimately have a Scotsman with a thick Scottish accent.
Yeah, he had, his was a good
with
though.
Peter Capaldi.
I could understand.
You have Sammy Davis, who's Mary, Junior, and not actually Sammy Davis Jr.
Not Junior.
You got excited. You thought Sammy Davis Jr. was in this.
I did. I was there one black person in this movie?
Not at all.
Nope. Rude. Take a star away.
Sammy Davis, who's doing this like Yorkshire accent, which is just like. Like the Minnesota of English accents, which is just you can't sound hot or cute with that accent. You just sound.
You're there.
You're there. And then you got Hugh Grant.
Yeah,
who's
that,
being like, ah, oh, some smarmy Minnesota.
Was that his like first movie? Not that he did bad. Just
not his first movie.
It's an odd movie for.
He hates to admit that he was in this movie.
Does he? I think we should spam him with mail, a fan mail of him
mail?
From mail.
Oh, okay.
Of him in this movie. And just like send him pics, and we can send him a box of worms.
We could dress up, you know, a lady of the night that may or may not be trans, like a white worm.
Okay.
Because, you know, he had that little mishap. It's 1994 again. This is my Radio Shock Shock 1994. What about Hugh Grant and that woman? Question mark.
I'll dress up as Lady Sylvia, but give me a year to get a rockin' hard body.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so a lot of weird accents based off of a weird myth that I'm going to explain after the break. Jenna's going to leave 2.5 stars. She looks good. Just going to put that on the record. She's looking good, so she won't beat me later.
Just good? Steve said I looked pretty.
Yeah.
What is wrong with good? Good and fine?
Scott will tell me you look fine. I'm like, should I go kill myself? Fine.
You look like, but is it like you look?
No, he doesn't do any of that. No, he just goes. You look fine. Ew. You could literally. That's like.
Looking, I would kill to look good. Fine would be fantastic.
Here is acceptable words: beautiful, gorgeous, ravishing, stunning, pretty.
Here's another word: late, as in you're going to be. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right, now that Jenna's gone, we can actually get the episode started.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah,
no, get out.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, she was what was really holding us back, obviously.
Doesn't even come prepared with worm lore like I did this week.
Look at that long ass go.
Long ass going up the stairwell. You. She's great, folks. Stuck at a wedding with her. Inescapable. We vomited. Now she's gone. That's just kind of how the world works. But I wanted to come in as the big fun part of this whole Mythology March thing we've been doing is actually looking into, like, the tales and stuff. And since Leprechaun was such a shitty movie, I figured, and we didn't go over my cool Leprechaun facts.
Oh my figured god. You're not gonna make us do that today, right?
Not the leprechaun facts, okay, absolutely not. No.
So you're just like, we really need to. Gotta get those out there in the world, because everyone was waiting for it.
I'm sure there's people that are waiting for it. But I also started teaching last week, so I'm having this, like, I want to talk to the class moment. Let's talk to the class. Let's talk about this myth. Let's look at something like myth and folklore holistically. This is my cool teacher voice. I don't sound anything like this. I am terrified of these children most days. But I do want to point out actual, like, different things about the myths we've looked at. So mostly looking at, like, the geography, the climate, the region, whatever.
Mm.
So obviously in Trollhunter, you got those mountain ranges from western Norway, big forests, and then the frozen north essentially going up. Perfect place where if you're an ancient people, you're going to come up with trolls. Mountains, they don't like Christians. You know, as we went through that whole talking about the myths and that regional thing, that makes sense there.
Mm-hmm.
And the witch, you got the hinterlands outside of Plymouth Colony and that puritanical social climate that we talked about kind of ad nauseum. And that obviously makes the perfect layer for a god-hating, witchcraft-using witch to lurk and prey upon good Puritan souls. Makes complete sense. North Dakota makes complete sense as a place where you would kidnap a small, diminutive Irishman and leave him in your basement. That makes complete sense.
Right.
Leprechaun. Which is what you do. I'm assuming there's a lot of people that are in North Dakota that have been kidnapped against their will living in someone's basement. That's what North Dakota is. That and one good hockey school. But for the layer of the white worm, we do actually want to get into a little bit of the geography because it's kind of interesting compared to everything else, even though kind of thinking about it now, we basically, for doing folklore and myth, really just did the whitest areas of the world this entire month.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it would be, it could be possibly been bad if we tried to do non-white stuff because you have how racist you are. I just wanted to make sure now that you're a teacher that everyone knows that.
Oh, man. Yeah. If anyone ever finds this podcast, not going to have a job. I like to say, for the record, I teach in a very multicultural school, and it's very enjoyable, and I like children of all ages and backgrounds.
Yeah, they all got the same size buttholes.
Oh, God. This is why I drink. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit about Northern England, just to set the tone for everything as I try to erase the images that Steve's putting in my head. For the layer of the white worm, the western region of the, I'm assuming, with the British, it's hard to tell how you pronounce things, because you would say Thames, but it's Thames. I think it's pronounced the Pennines, or maybe the Pennines, the Pennines. It's basically called the backbone of England. It's the mountain region that's north in England that adjoins into Scotland. It's very craggy, mountainous, hilly. That whole Penning chain region is almost a complete mountain chain. It's not technically, there are lowlands and ways to get through it. But it's been carved by numerous rivers, the rivers Tyne and Wear being the most prominent and the most important in the myth, that leads to the North Sea outside County Durham, where the myth originates, to the east. So this whole region's kind of important because it's really, like, geographically unique. So there's a lot of natural aqueducts and aquifers, temperate forest, moors, there's a ton of ancient cairns, and of course in all this region, a big amount of animals you find are snakes and salamanders and river eels and lampreys and other wiggly things that are fucking terrifying if you're a peasant and you have an overexcitable amount of imagination from the church telling you what to believe. So also in this whole region is like this ancient Roman influence. So in the southeast of County Durham, there's the Penshaw Monument, which used to be an Iron Age fort for the Picts that the Romans eventually took over, and they put this Greek temple there looking thing on top of it because, again, Rome was pretty much owned the northern half of England during when Rome was, you know, the big guy on the block. And then north of that, you got Hadrian's Wall, which is the coast-to-coast spanning fortification of sorts that separated what was Britannia. Trying to think of like all my Crusader King eras now on the top of my head. So Britannia for Rome and that separate, obviously, Britannia from Scotland, where the Picts were from. Mm. And if you've ever watched, you know, King Arthur, the great King Arthur movie with all those, you know, who was in that? Keira Knightley and all of them. That's a fun
movie. Charlie Hunnam, that one?
No, not that one. The one of, hang on.
The, like, shitty one from the early 2000s?
Yeah. You know, it had, one of the, was it Charlie Hunnam as the Viking guy?
No, Charlie Hunnam was in the newer one. I thought that's the one you were talking about.
The one of, Clive Owen and Mads Mikkelsen. Where it's like the actual Knights of the Round Table. Ray Stevenson's in it. Ray Winston. Hugh Dancy. You don't remember that one?
No, now I don't know what you're talking about
at all. Oh, it's a cool movie. It's really fucking stupid. It's trying to pawn itself off as being historically accurate. Anyway, this whole region kind of makes sense of where you would get a myth for a giant snake. You got weird Roman architecture that would influence the idea of there being temples. This is all going to play into the fucking story of this movie, I promise, because this movie is... I'm trying to make the story of this movie interesting because it is really thrown together. It's a Ken Russell movie. It's just there to be obscenely, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, I see the one you're talking about. Yeah. Clive Owen. Was played Arthur?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, this is a crazy cast, actually.
It's not a bad movie. It's like overly dramatic, but you see Keira Knightley is one of the Picts. Merlin's actually just a Pictish shaman. It's kind of fun. And yeah. The Vikings are obviously the bad guys.
No, did you see the
it's cool
the,
shit.
The Guy Ritchie one from 2017?
Is that the one with Charlie Hunnam that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the one with Charlie Hunnam. That one was also not great.
Hang on, Jude Law? Yeah, Eric Bana, Jimon Hansu? Is it Legend of the Eric Sword? Bana. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Eric Bana. Who did this one? Guy Ritchie. It's a rare Guy Ritchie movie I've missed watching, and I think I'm going to keep it that way. I was subbing on Friday. We did a movie day, so we watched Pacific Rim, and Charlie Hunnam is the same character in every movie.
Yeah.
I'm a tough white guy that's lost family. It's all about family and robots and the round table, motorcycles.
Yeah, I think you're mixing a couple of ones up now.
But. Yeah. Anyway, I was on a tangent here about something. Now we're just looking at King Arthur movies.
There's snakes in Northern England. That's actually, it's funny that you mentioned this. So, that region, Durham, that you're talking about, was traditionally a part of the kingdom and then county and then all the other bullshit of Northumbria, which, talking about snakes and mentioning Vikings, even though technically I think there were Saxons in that King Arthur movie.
Yeah.
Northumbria is also where King Ayla was from, and if you watch the show Vikings or are familiar with the sagas and whatnot, King Ayla was the guy who killed Ragnar Lothbrok by throwing him in a pit of vipers. And that's part
which of
which
is not a way I would ever want to go.
No. But that's also kind of, you know, it makes sense that, you know, you got a bunch of snakes, like, be able to wrangle up enough snakes to throw a guy in a pit and it be believable is pretty real. And yeah, and like Hadrian's Wall, I mean, historically, like, it basically, like, the border of County Durham was, like, literally up against Hadrian's Wall, and the some of them rivers you were talking about. But yeah, so there's snakes. I mean, and the thing to also that I think is very interesting, not necessarily about this particular thing, but the myths of England and, you know, in general are very interesting because of how many cultures fought over this dumb little fucking island. I mean, historically, you had you had the Welsh and the Cornish and the Angles, who were all living here, and they were all kind of vaguely Brythonic. And then the Romans came, and you always had the Gaels and to the east, and Picts to the north and stuff, and then you have the, after that you have the Saxon migration, and then after the Saxon migration you have the Viking Age with tons of land, and this is all within a fucking, you know, five, that's, that alone is within like a 200 year span, and then you have, or well, you know, more, it's like 500 years, and then you have the French invasions, starting with, you know, obviously William the Conqueror of Normandy, and then the Normans themselves were like French Vikings. They were just Vikings that were given land because they pissed off the French enough that there's like, yeah, well, what if we gave you a house instead of you doing this every summer?
How about a nice summer cottage up north, you know, about 3 acres, you know, a little lakeside, you don't kill my family and steal all my shit, we're good? We're good? All right, good,
and
great.
So that led to them eventually attacking, and that's like what generally led to like the beginning of old English culture, was the merging of like Norman shit with Anglo-Saxon, which was in and of itself a merging of Brythonic and Germanic culture. So I mean, England's like got so many myths between the different cultures that were there and the different cultures that came there and brought things from other places, that there are tons of shit like this story, which makes me wonder why there aren't more like movies and literature that cover it, because this one sucks. So like this is like, yeah, got like England.
I think this is the weird thing too, is like there's so much going on in like English mythology. I'm gonna say English very, I'll say UK and Ireland, we'll say super broadly, like you said, there's a ton going on, and the only way for this movie to make somewhat more sense to you beside a couple of terrible hallucinatory images and a song that explains all of the details is like knowing this myth. Otherwise, you're just watching a very convoluted, very obvious a comedy, but it's also one of those movies that are so tongue-in-cheek, you don't know if you're supposed to be laughing the entire time, which you are, because it's a Ken Russell movie. Mm. But there's so much fucking going on in this that without knowing the myth, it just looks like it was just a really bad movie. And it kind of was, believe it or not. It had a $2 million budget that it, $2 to $2.5 million, depending who you ask. And it did not make anywhere close to that. It only made a little bit over $1 million. So this was not a good movie. Like I said, Hugh Grant hates this movie, tries to not mention he was in this movie. It's without knowing the myth, which I'm going to go over because it's a really weird myth. Without going over it, you just legitimately have a plot that involves an archaeologist that's nowhere as cool as Indiana Jones, a couple hot broads that are going to get sacrificed, a worm, snake, vampire woman, a very confused Hugh Grant with a sword, and a giant snake, and that's it. It could be like a sword and sorcery movie if you just threw it like 500 years in the past. Otherwise, it's just this weird movie that takes place in Northern England in the 80s. There's so much fucking going on. It's annoying.
Yeah, there's, I mean, we'll get more to that, but yeah, there's a lot of really dumb shit in this movie. I really don't think it's that horrible, but it's definitely,
it's fun,
stupid.
Yeah. So I think the best thing to do is actually tell the Legend of the Lambton Worm, which if you listen to the song in the movie and you can understand the accent, you can get the entire myth from that. But instead, I'm going to spell it out word for word instead of some very strange North Englanders singing Hilljack music to explain exactly why they throw a festival once a year, because they're inbred morons. So, the Legend of the Lambton Worm, like any regional tale, you know, it's one that can have various renditions depending where in County Durham you're from. So in general, regardless of the performance and the details that accompany it, the 14th century myth goes somewhat like this. Yet a young John Lambton, who's known to be a rebellious teenager of sorts, he's got no wisdom, he's really dumb, and intentionally skips church, which obviously is a big no-no. This is
classic fighter build, you know, classic.
Low wisdom, low intelligence.
Dumps whiz, dumps in, dumps charisma, 18 strength, 18 con, 14 dex, classic build.
So he decides to go fishing one day on one of the many rivers in County Durham. So on his way, he encounters a figure, and depending on the myth, it's anything from a witch to a wizard to just an old man to any other fucking person you can imagine. And this dude, figure, myth, witch, whatever the fuck they are, warn him that it's folly to miss church to go fishing, which, you know, I thought Jesus liked fish. So I don't know how this is, specifically folly, but he says fuck off. He goes fishing, catches
Jesus doesn't like people go fishing. He like, you gotta like go breading or whatever, and then like turn the bread into fish. Whatever the fuck that story is.
Now, I'm pretty sure he likes fishing because he walks on water. He can get anywhere on the lake.
No.
No?
No.
I don't know.
No, there's a whole thing. There's a whole... See, you're squandering a bit because there's a whole thing about, like, the Jesus... what's the fucking fish story?
Is it 500? Well, God, I went to Catholic school for a long time.
I'm literally Googling Jesus and fish. Okay, yeah. He took 7 loaves...
He picked 7 loaves from the bread tree?
No. So the miracle is the feeding of the 4,000 with 7 loaves of bread and a few small fish. So he like turns the loaves into more loaves and the 2 fish into more fish.
So basically people had a Caesar salad with the fucking tiny anchovies and the fucking breadcrumbs without the actual lettuce and everything else. He basically just made shitty original Caesar salad for them to eat and is taking credit for, what, 5,000 people eating?
Yeah, 4,000.
4,000, well, all right.
5,000. Hold on.
Well, who is your source? Judas Iscariot? I don't feel like I could trust this.
So he feeds 5,000, and then he also feeds 4,000. Is the 2 separate stories, apparently.
Jesus. Literally, Jesus.
And that one he does with 7 loaves of fish. So he actually uses less loaves of bread in the second one to feed... more loaves of bread to feed less people in the second one. So maybe his power was waning.
He was really low on mana. That was the problem.
He used all his 3rd level spells by that time. So he needed to take a long rest, so he had to use the 2nd level.
What class do you play in D&D? Oh, I am Christ the Messiah. Whoa. Anyway, John Lampton's bad because he skipped church, where he could be hearing these very interesting stories about fish bread. Anyway... depending on the myth, he catches either an eel, a salamander, or a lamprey that is supposedly anywhere from as big as his thumb to 3 feet long and symbolic of Satan. The mysterious figure returns to tell him, "You caught the devil," and scares a young man who takes the devil fish and throws it down a well. Naturally, for his penance, he becomes a knight and joins the Crusades, because obviously when you do wrong, you just go kill some people that look different from you, you steal their stuff, you say a couple prayers... and God's happy with you. So while he's gone, the serpent ends up poisoning the well, growing to a massive length and girth. I did use the term length and girth in my notes. Breaking free from the well, devouring cattle and animals across the countryside. Eventually, you know,
I just did some research real quick.
I'm going back to Jesus.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, while a lot of people would probably say that Jesus would be like a cleric of some kind, I actually think he would be like a divine soul sorcerer.
Oh, he's definitely a sorcerer, yeah.
I think that would make more sense. But continue.
Would he not be a warlock of God himself as patron?
See, I thought of that. I thought of that too, but I don't think that really fits as much. Because the sorcery has the bloodline thing. And so if it's a divine soul, then that makes more sense.
Yeah.
He's also probably an Asimar, which would explain why he was white, even though he was in, like, the Middle East.
Oh, well, the only true Jesus is white Jesus. We know this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I did listen in Catholic school. I know about blonde hair, blue-eyed Jesus that loves all good blue-eyed, blonde-haired Christians around the world.
Cool Jesus.
Cool, Jesus. Eventually, the worm gets really big, eats a bunch of animals, gets to Lambton Castle, where John's father, Lord Lambton, resides. He calms the snake by feeding him the milk of 9 good cows, which has got to be some sort of, I don't know, metaphor for
none
something
of,
horrific.
None of those shitty cows. 9 good cows.
See, good cows is a good statement. Like when Jenna says, do I look good? I can say you look good. Good is a fine word. Is she as good as 9 good cows? Absolutely fucking not. Because there's no way she would calm a giant serpent. Anyway, he does. No, the Lord
you're
does
that
the,
fight every day, dude.
I am losing that fight every day. Anyway, the Lord Lambton decides that he's got to give this snake milk of 9 good cows, and then tries to reward a bunch of knights to kill the milk drunk snake, and they can't because again,
that
this
snake's
is kind of
milk drunk.
The snake is essentially also the Hydra from like Roman and Greek mythology, where if you kill it, it just comes back together. So he's paying money for his knights, he's giving up all his milk. And basically, he's not successful. John comes back 7 years later from the Crusades. He's feeling good about killing some infidels. Gets back, learns of the Lambton worm, and learns that his father has fallen destitute, mostly because he spent all his money on milk and knights, and they're going to die poor. So, he's met again by the figure from 7 years previous, and John is told to don spiked armor to do battle with the beast in the River Weir. And after his triumph, if he succeeds, to sacrifice the first living creature he sees to undo the curse of the satanic worm that he brought himself to County Durham many years ago. Now, in the case of that last requirement, John and his father agree that they'll release his trusting hunting hound on victory. The dog will run to John. John will kill the dog. Then the curse is gone, which is just, you know, exactly what you do if your pet dog is... You end curses by sacrificing him when he's really happy to see you.
Yeah, your pet dog, which if you've been playing Elden Ring like me, is actually a turtle.
You're not doing jellyfish?
No, there's a so you know you haven't played the game, so there's like a meme because
I know.
There's a meme because for some reason, even though there's a tons of turtles and even turtle characters in the game, there's no word for the messages for turtle. So people, when they put messages, the only animal that's in there is like dog. So they're just saying like dog ahead and it's just like turtles.
That's, so. I really got to get on this Elden Ring train.
Yeah, it's crazy that you haven't.
Of all the people, yeah, I'm the one that's not playing it. I know. Yeah. I'm just good to see in the chat how you are just now a fan of this. I know you hate every other Souls thing ever, but I still
don't like them. This hasn't
anyway,
like, made me like them all of a sudden, but
it's a good game. It looks like a good game. I don't know. I haven't played it yet. Anyway, John jumps in the river with his spiked armor. The snake bites him. He's ripping pieces off of it that rush down the river. Can't regenerate the worm. Kills the worm. And in his excitement, his father, jackass Lord Lambton, rushes to congratulate his son, not releasing the dog. John then realizes he's not going to kill his father because he just saved his ass. So he can't do that. So they go back and kill the dog anyway, thinking that they outsmarted the curse, which you can't do. So as legend goes, in County Durham, for 9 generations, the Lambton line was and might still technically be cursed, with each male heir dying in mysterious and often agonizing circumstances. And the tale is both a warning and now source of entertainment for centuries after it was said to have actually occurred. And that is why Hugh Grant's character is so important in this movie, because he is essentially one of the heirs of Lord Lambton. Now, in the movie, they are called...
The Damptons.
The Damptons, instead of the Lambtons.
Because he's always getting that wet.
Which gets you wet. The white snake. The Lair of the White Worm also really could have been a porno if they just really didn't care. But they tried to. Also, this sounds like a threat. Like you're going to be let into like Louis C.K.'s like green room. You're like, come with us. You're cute. Come to the Lair of the White Worm.
The Lair of the White Worm is what I call my chastity cage.
God. You caged up right now?
Oh, you know, a steak aged up.
God damn it. So that whole backstory is what makes this movie make sense. And I'm going to sum this up as easily as I can, mostly for the fact that the best thing about this whole thing is the myth and not the movie. So you got Peter Capaldi, who's named Angus Flint. He's Scottish. Not hard to miss because he's got a fucking thick-ass Scottish accent. All Peter Capaldi does is use his thick-ass Scottish accent to play roles. Everyone pretty much knows him as Doctor Who. Very cool. He's done other things as well.
He's also Malcolm Tucker in The Thick of It and In the Loop, which are like
two some of the funniest British English TV shows
of all time. Yeah.
He was also in...
He was also someone... I forget which character, but he was someone's dad in Skins.
Skins. Oh, Skins. I'm looking. Anyway, he's done other stuff besides being Doctor Who, but basically once you're Doctor Who in England, you're just knighted, and then that's all people know you for. But he's been in theater since the 70s. He's not a bad actor. And this movie,
he's awesome. I love Peter Capaldi.
Yeah, he's not the worst part of this movie. He's in archaeology, and outside a convent, he finds a giant snake skull. The snake skull itself is actually just two cow skulls they kind of like put together for the movie. He works.
Yeah, that thing looks not like a skull.
Nothing like a snake at all.
It looks so fucking weird.
Which just kind of shows what level of archaeologist. He's like, look, snake skull. That's like. Angus, that's a cow skull.
That's a dog. Like, what is that? That's just like a normal. That's a dog.
Angus,
leg.
you're just digging up the kids' previously deceased animals. Maybe you should go practice this somewhere else. Anyway, he's working outside this convent that's by this bed and breakfast by the Trent sisters that they own it. So we have Mary, who's played by Sammy Davis, not Sammy Davis Jr. She's got the thick Yorkshire accent. Sammy Davis has been. And a couple things, you probably know her more for being in, like, English television more than anything. I'm looking through her movies now and, like, legitimately. In an episode of Lost, essentially, is where you might know her from. Oh, and in the original Homefront from the 90s, which is a different Homefront than the one that's, like, the weird Middle Eastern... propaganda action show. So she really hasn't done much, but she's cute in this for the most part, besides her accent. She's also got a sister played by Katherine Oxenberg, who you might actually realize is a person that's of somewhat interesting background. She was on the soap opera Dynasty, which your mother or grandmother probably really fucking loved during the early 80s. She is legitimately the daughter of Princess Elizabeth of Yugoslavia. So she's legitimately royalty.
That's why she looks that way.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, that's where the weak chin comes from. So I told you, these English people are all fucking inbred and have weak chins. So she's actually somewhat famous. She's done television. She's playing eventually to be sacrificed Eve. He finds a skull, and then basically they show up at a dance because this movie has the very quick pacing. There we meet Lord of the Manor, John Dampton. Who, with a bunch of musicians, does a weird dance with the White Worm, which explains that whole story I told you. And then the rest of this movie is kind of thrown together. James finds a pocket watch that's thought to belong to someone. Listen, this movie's really fucking stupid. Essentially, what happens is a really sexy woman named Lady Sylvia Marsh appears. And if this movie has just been a softcore porno with weird hallucinogenic green screen trances in between, it would have been much better. But essentially, Lady Sylvia Marsh is this ancient priestess of the snake god Dionin, who is not an ancient snake god.
Yeah, not just real.
Not real at all. It's probably in a Japanese anime RPG, though. I'm sure there's probably a Dionin. She's an immortal priestess of the snake god. She kind of
immortal priestess
like...
of the snake god.
She's like a vampire. She'll make you into a snake. She's a strong, independent woman with a great fashion sense and a beautiful abode. And she's going to bite you in the dick and paralyze you and then kill you. And that's basically the best part of this movie. they find out that there is actually a giant Lambton worm or Deampton worm that's connected from her house, the temple house, to the caverns and the caves next to it. Lady Snake Bitch kidnaps Eve. She's going to sacrifice her. That whole scene was supposed to be way more naked and more sexy, but the actress Eve, who was Catherine Oxenberg, whose legitimate loyalty, did not want to do it naked, so they put her in expensive underwear instead. Angus shows up. It's basically like if you took Temple of Doom and instead of making it cool, you had a couple interludes of a snake woman and the escape from the sacrificing, and that's about it. And that's what the plot of this movie is. Oh, and then Peter Capaldi, he was actually bitten. His anti-venom wasn't anti-venom that he thought he had. Everyone's snake people. It's a shocking ending. And that's all this movie's worth about talking about.
There were points where I was watching this movie where I felt like if this were like made by like one of the Zucker brothers or something and had like a little bit more jokes and stuff, like it would land. But it's not even just the Britishness of it, because like I can do pretty well with a lot of that stuff. But it's just things like it's so hard to see what the tone is supposed to be. And, you know, it's funny when like Angus is walking around and all of a sudden he's like, you know, full kill bagpipes. Like, he put on the kilt to do the whole thing, and he put on, like, the tartan and everything, and, like...
What we did learn is that we can trance, apparently, wild snakes with the soothing sounds of bagpipes.
Yeah. and so shit like that, he's, like, in the manor or the estate or whatever you want to call it, and he's, like, fucking... He just, like, pulls a mongoose out of his pants, out of his kilt, like... He has like a fucking bag of holding in his kilt that he just keeps pulling random shit out of, like a grenade and a whole ass mongoose and like a giant needle filled with not real anti-venom. So like you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of things that are not subtle about this movie, which makes you go, oh, this is supposed to be a comedy. But then there's like large swaths in between where nothing funny happens, and it's not because jokes are falling flat, it's just because like there is nothing funny happening. So it's weird. I hate to just be like, this movie's weird, because I hate shit like that, but it's weird in the sense of not just like, oh my god, that's so crazy and random, kind of like dumb person weird. It's weird in the sense of like, it's like what was the intent? Because like they're really like, what kind of movie was trying to be made? Like, it's listed as a horror comedy.
You almost feel like if you know a Ken Russell movie, it's not hard to believe that there is comedy in them. But you also kind of feel like they labeled it a horror comedy because, again, the weirdness of just the way his movies hit, which are like, you're not sure if it's intentionally trying to be goofy, if it's intentionally trying to be like a well-done film, or if it's just that weird abomination that is a Ken Russell movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's like he got this picture deal because of this movie Gothic, which is about Lord Byron. I vaguely remember watching that in college for a class. I don't know why we watched it, but the actual Bram Stoker story of the Lair of the White Worm based off that myth is also really fucking weird. It's considered a bad gothic novel.
It's considered one of the worst books ever made.
Oh yeah. it's bad. And it's definitely one of those books that does not age well, just because of the characters that are within it.
isn't there like a slave like named like Ooga Booga? Like legitimately, it's like a,
well, there is a specifically mentioned half Burmese woman throughout the movie. There is a black manservant named Ulanga who is obsessed with death and torture. Because Ulanga, come on now, not Ooga Booga, it's Ulanga.
Sorry, I was
being, there was are being multiple racist. Multiple scenes in this fucking book with mongoose being released, or is it mongooses? I don't fucking know.
Mongooses.
Mungai are released. Like, it's a dumb, it's a legitimately like a mad scientist story meets guy with a bunch of mongooses meets weird priestess. And somehow, you know, Ken Russell was like, I can make a movie from this. So if you actually look at the synopsis of the story with the myth I told you, I guess I'll argue that he did put some sort of narrative, albeit poorly, together. He took a bunch of things and was like, I can make sense of all of these myths, which is kind of what, you know, happened with The Witch, except The Witch was put together really well. It's a spectacular movie, and this is really, really, really bad. I think Hugh Grant, who I learned while putting the research together for this movie, his real name is Hugh John Mungo Grant.
Yeah.
Which is, I will only refer to him going forward as Hugh Mungo Grant.
Hugh Mungo. Yeah, exactly.
Hugh Mungo Grant. It's
fucking crazy.
Like, you can tell, like, he's just, like, he's trying to give it the old theater try, but you can also tell he hates every moment that he's in this fucking movie. you got Amanda Donahoe, who's latest Lady Sylvia March, who's basically gnawing, fang-fucking the fucking scenery in this movie. She's just going all in and just being like, you want a snake priestess that's kind of horny, that delivers such classic lines as, are you into any kind of banging? Or when she is, oh God, the one line when she's talking to Hugh Mungo Grant, do you have any children? Only when there are no men around.
Yeah.
Like she's intentionally just hamming it up. She's having a good time. Like, I change my cause as regularly as snake sheds its skin. Like, it's, she's the whole best part of the movie, besides the fact that she's fucking good looking and she's got, like I was been saying earlier, like that naughty school mistress, tight haired aristocratic English woman, which is pretty much all you see of, in British porn is like women like that. You know, is she an Ava Bangs? No. Is she fun to watch? Absolutely. And then you got like Katherine Oxenberg, who's like fine as Eve, whatever. She's like your damsel in distress character. Peter Capaldi's fucking decent in it. It's funny. You can tell he's having fun with it. And then everyone else is just kind of there. And it's just a really weird set of everything to be handed this and being like, you have a movie deal. What do you want to do? I want to do this. Okay. Because, like, there's nothing, you're not working with anything. You're working with a couple myths and a badly written book and being just throwing it together. And somehow someone paid you $2 to $2.5 million to do it, which is why the English are all fucking insane. This is why they don't have an empire anymore. They're getting exactly what they deserve because of this fucking movie.
I think it would be surprising, based on the way we're talking about it, that I actually gave this movie 3 stars, but I did.
Jesus.
Because it's all very, very stupid. And it has a lot of flaws, but I really enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed it in a level where it wasn't just because of, like, the it's so bad, it's good, blah, blah, blah stuff, which, as I've talked about before, at least when I rate movies, that doesn't go to the star level. That goes to, like, whether or not I liked it. But, like, there's, like, an authenticness to the creation of a movie. But I thought that this movie was shot very well and has a lot of, like, good performances, even though it's dumb material. Like, Hugh Grant is... part of it could be like this relation, because I've, you know, watched a bunch of Hugh Grant movies in my life because I've been around women, so like I've seen him in things before.
Oh, you're a Love Actually kind of guy. I knew it.
And everything. And so it's like, so part of it is like this kind of conception of him, but it was also just like he fits that role really well of this kind of, he's debonair but he's still kind of awkward in this way, where because he's young, he's coming into what this position is, and he's kind of got his head filled up about being the guy who has to conquer this thing and solve it and whatever. Peter Capaldi's awesome in what he's doing with it. obviously the woman that plays Sylvia, I forgot her name already. I don't care. Don't say it. I saw you about to go look it up.
Yeah.
You know, she plays that role amazingly. So there's a lot of good performances. It sets the vibes really well. You know, we get not like a bunch of crazy establishing shots, but we see all these woods and they walk through the grove to get back home and everything. And you get kind of steeped into the feeling. They make sure to immerse you in that small English town vibe with, you know, everybody knowing everyone and talking about everyone's business and everything. It really kind of does suck you in, and it's paced well. Even though it's really dumb, it has a lot of flaws, and it really turns at a point. I do think it's pretty good. The final actual effect of the worm is pretty good.
It's very cool. This is definitely a monster movie where they made the monster actually, when you do see it, it's cool. Yeah. It's got that kind of
throwback
to like the 50s and the 60s. Yeah.
And it also, it helps, you know, they did something smart, which you don't see, you know, in a lot of lower budget movies. That's one thing, you know, we've talked about this briefly, but they did something smart, which is they knew how to conceal it, right? You put it in a fucking hole and you just see like this gaping maw on its head. You don't, I mean, obviously it's just a snake, but like that's easy. That's like a puppet that a guy stands in. Like, and just like closes his arms. If it's not a miniature, which at one point it looked like it was, you know, so it's like, it looks good because they did it simply. I mean, there's things, a lot of the problems in movies when the monsters look bad is because it's like a bad rubber suit and then they put a fucking light directly on it and you see the entire thing. You're like, oh, that's why that looks shitty. That's the whole thing when we were talking about it briefly with like Return of the Living Dead, like the notorious like screaming skull in the fucking in that scene. And that was like one of the things that was left from the original effects guy, where you can see like how shitty it is and you can see the dowel moving and stuff. It's not that bad when you're just like moving the thing up and down and making it open its mouth. But when you do that whole dramatic scene where it's a close up on it and there's flashes of lightning, then you notice like, oh wow, that's made bad, and there's the mechanism that's making the skeleton's mouth open. You don't get that with a fucking worm in a hole. Like, you know, so then you had the questionable effects that were supposed to be like hallucinatory, whatever, of the various
sequences. Which is my favorite part of the whole fucking movie.
Yeah, that shit's fun.
It's such a fun, weird thing. It's one of my favorite things is like, it's one of those visual effects that's, it's super easy. All you're doing is just taking different green screen video footages and just making a music video essentially with it. Like, it looks like it could have been a really weird, like 80s, I don't know, like synth wave, new wave song of a little edge, like Snake Worm Woman or something. Like, you know, like it's, you got like Adam Ant or something fucking doing something with it.
Like, get rid of some of like the more garish colors and make them black, and it's a Sisters of Mercy video.
And that's, I will agree with you. The special effects, the practical effects, being that guy. I love the way that the snake is referenced. Obviously, they do the classic theater trope where if you say or show the gun in the first act, you better see or use the gun by the third act. We know there's a snake. We see the snake. It's pretty not awful looking. We have, you know, Lady Sylvia Marsh, who's our villain the whole movie, who does carry the movie. She acts well. As much as I'm giving Hugh Grant shit, and I think he's pretty crappy in the movie, I still think that he plays the role correctly. I think my whole problem with the movie is that it's trying to do way too much. I think this movie would have been fucking hella cool if you like started off in the English countryside, and then it just became this weird hallucinatory acid trip throughout the movie of like, are we really fighting a giant snake, or did we all of a sudden take way too many Quaaludes or something? Like,
yeah,
I kind of wish it leaned more into it, but like, I don't feel like I wasn't in Northern England. I just think that with all the source material and what he put together, it's it's not bad. It's a fun adventure movie. Again, if you do a giant monster movie and you make the giant monster look cool and you do see it, you kind of succeed. But to me, it's a 2-star movie. It's a fun adventure that, you know, this is a fun movie to watch with friends for sure. But I just don't like this movie. I was kind of hoping I was going to like this movie on the second watch within the last couple of months, because I did choose this as my folklore movie. But it is what it is. So better than Leprechaun.
So what do you give it?
Two stars.
Two stars. Yeah, that's really wild of you to pick this movie, because
I want to go outside of what I wanted to do, and I was going to do Rawhead Rex, which is a worse, much worse version of this movie. It's way more
fun, though.
That's one of the movies where it's like, going back to seeing how the sausage is made, it's like, it's not a good movie.
No.
It's a great Clive Barker story. I love my Clive Barkers, we know, but I wanted to try something that maybe, and still is better, but was definitely not the movie I kind of thought I was going to do.
So, like, again, let's peel behind the curtain. We make a podcast that we ostensibly want people to listen to. We know we don't do crazy numbers when we do, like, old, weird, or foreign movies and not, like, new ones. And you pick this movie, which you don't even like, and you knew you didn't like, and you're like, we're going to do this one.
Sometimes I just want to prove to myself that I don't like a movie that I'm unsure of. Let's not do that for the podcast.
You can just watch the movie. You can just watch the fucking movie.
No, I have to talk about why I hate the movie. Don't worry, we're ending
Mythological March. You don't even hate March. It. It's 2 stars.
It's a meh movie. Yeah, exactly. It's a meh movie.
It's not, exactly, which makes for the worst podcast episodes. When we don't really like something or really hate something, it makes for middling episodes if it's not like a cool
story. That we love Veronica because the amount we shit on that movie and talk about that movie?
I just said whether we love or hate the movie is when we get the best episodes. And we hate that movie.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. I wanted to do something
different. You pick a movie that is just like, it's okay. Interesting lore behind it. Besides, there's a story in Northern England about that time that a guy saw a weird worm.
Who went fishing.
Yeah, a guy who caught a guy who caught the first lamprey and didn't know what it was. Like, it is.
Then joins the Crusades because he feels bad.
Fuck off.
That's like the American version of like a fucking little hill jagoff kid that goes to the fishing hole, catches some weird mutated animal, goes to Vietnam, comes back. Like, it's a completely dumb fucking story.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's if a guy caught a snakehead fish when, damn, that's shit's invasive. Time to get killed by guys that live in dirt because my government's making me. And then, like, go and get...
You come home and your dad's poor because of the snake you caught poisoned the well.
Exactly. Fucking, yeah, you caught a snakehead fish and made them... And while you were losing, all of your friends and part of your leg...
developing a really bad heroin addiction.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, fucking Saigon.
Yeah, due to American imperialism, you were your dad, who normally doesn't eat food besides the old, like, moldy cans of fucking Miller High Life that he leaves around, and once, like, the cultures of yeast start growing large enough, it becomes like a piece of bread that he can eat. He's like, oh, my son caught me this beautiful fish, and it's just like a writhing ass snakehead, and it just, like, splits into seven, and he's just like, look, it's just like Jesus. In either the time where
I'm gonna give it some milk.
Yeah, and either the time he made 4,000 to 5,000 people be fed, and one of the two miracles, and then it perforates
it becomes a myth of Northern Mississippi, which is essentially what this is. See, I want a fucking prodigious name to attach themselves to a remake of Lair of the White Worm and do the exact movie we just talked about, set in the Vietnam era. Make this fucking happen.
Yeah, no,
you go ahead and make it an allegory if you want about something or whatever.
Ten minutes of like guy going fishing, and then just like the full entirety, like full run, shot for shot remake of Apocalypse Now, and then and then 10 minutes of this guy coming back and just like shooting a weird fucking snake in his backyard point blank with a fucking M16 and then killing himself.
It's kind of like Deer Hunter meets like Metal Gear Solid 3, essentially. Oh God. Yeah.
Maybe I'll do some copyright infringement and just start playing that towards the end of the episode.
You know, the only thing that would make the movie better is if you're remaking this movie, that the dad is one of those fucking snake preachers where he like grabs the snake, the fucking snake thing is psycho, and he's letting it bite him. He's just like, yeah, power of Christ protects me. Come, if you believe, get bit by my son snake.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. See, we can make a good movie. And that's why I picked this movie, because we got to do that stupid ass bit.
Oh, we did one 5-minute bit at the end of the fucking episode. Everyone's already
justification.
No one's listening to this. This is just us and probably Carl, because he listens to every episode because he's a good friend. I love you. So yeah, I'm done. Rude speaker on the socials. Bye bye.
We're done with this movie. If you enjoyed this piece of shit, at Groovy Little Pod on the Twitters, on the Instagrams. I'm going to be putting more stuff up. I'm going to be honest, I took like the last week off because I didn't feel like doing anything. But we are officially at the end of the month, which means we do have a final film before we do whatever the fuck we're going to do in April. So on Thursday the 31st, the final episode of Mythological March is again something coming from a very white area. The American Wild Wild West with Bone Tomahawk, which was Steve's suggestion that I jumped right behind because this movie's fucking awesome. I have no idea how Jenna's going to enjoy this one. It's kind of got an action movie thing going on. The villains are creepy as fuck.
It's extremely boring for an hour, so we'll see if she if she gets through the first
time. We learn about how and why a man breaks his leg, essentially, for a good 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But the end of this movie is great, and of course you have Wild Wild West fucking Kurt Russell, who is probably the same character that he was in The Hateful Eight, just kind of survived and went south.
Bone Tomahawk is a really good movie, and it's really, it has a lot of really interesting things to talk about, and it's pretty recent. So it's the polar opposite of this movie. So if you've sat through this episode and are ruining the day you started listening to us because this is the way that Scott treats you, just know that I got you Bone Tomahawk next week. So
yeah, all right, get Bone Tomahawked with us. And if you follow Jenna, Spider Queen or something on the Letterboxd. I am at Dagul Daddy on all the socials. You people keep following me. I don't know why. I just talk about sports at this point because I'm excited for baseball and the Hawks maybe actually rebuilding their team. That's all I got. Snakes are scary. Stay away from snake women. Don't go to Vietnam and come back with a heroin addiction and kill a giant snake. I don't know. I'm out of here. Goodbye. Adios.